You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education issue review podcast for the edition covering the 25th of September to the 1st of October 2014. My name's Chris Parr. I'm joined by Deputy News Editor John Morgan, Books Editor Karen Shook and reporter Chris Havergal. Concerns over the money used for the University of Central Lancashire and its project in Cyprus are the subject of this week's lead news story. John will have more on that in a second, as well as some stories from the Labour Party conference, which he attended in Manchester earlier this week. Regular listeners will know our book section promises a bumper crop of reviews and insight into what academics across the country are currently reading, when they have the time, of course. Karen will bring us a roundup of this week's book section in just a moment. And our new reporter, Chris Havergal, has been covering the fallout from the Scottish no vote and also has news of a decline in the number of Indian students enrolling in UK universities. But first, over to you, John Morgan. The splash this week concerns the University of Central Lancashire.
So this is about concerns over £16 million of money that went into the building of UCLan's Cyprus campus. Mm. And it all relates to a high-profile trial that's going on in Cyprus at the moment, involving the former chairman of CETA, which is the state telecoms company. And the allegation that the former chairman denies is that he used money from CETA's pension fund to buy land, allegedly for, it's a separate land deal this, allegedly for well above its market value, and allegedly he took kickbacks as part of that deal. Okay. So he denies all this, as I say. But it's now emerged that one of the other projects that CETA's pension fund put money into under its previous board was the building of UCLan Cyprus. And Cyprus's Auditor General told me that he has concerns about the investment that went into the building of the campus, and he wants its quality to be checked by some consultants that CETA have hired as part of the process of finding out just where the money has gone. Mm. And UCLan have said that UCLan Cyprus never received any of this investment from CETA. And it was a loan arrangement between CETA and the campus developers from which UCLan rents the premises. And they've also said that the investment is regarded as secure by the new CETA management, they've been told. Mm-hmm. But this is the latest in a series of problems for UCLan, really, and its overseas campuses.
Yeah, there was the Thailand campus, wasn't there, which never really got off the ground at all.
That's right. So the Thailand campus that UCLan hoped to build, they got into a dispute with the Thai partner they were working with there. I believe he was a warehouse entrepreneur. Mm. But it collapsed, the project, and UCLan ended up having to write off an estimated £3.2 million. There's also the Sri Lanka campus, where there are concerns about the UCLan working in a country where the government's faced severe criticism about its human rights record. And there was also previous problems with the UCLan Cyprus campus, where the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon had said the campus was unauthorised and a security worry, because it had been built in the UN buffer zone that separates the island's Greek and Turkish Cypriot communities.
Which you visited, of course.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've been out there and nearly sparked a diplomatic incident by taking photos in the buffer zone.
Yeah, not funny. Now page 6 and 7 for that story and all the other stories we've mentioned there can of course be searched for on our site. Before we move on, John, you were a bit closer to home than Cyprus this week. You were up in Manchester attending the Labour Party conference. As a sort of, I was keeping an eye on it, I wasn't looking at it in detail. It seemed more of a case of no news for HE being the story in many ways.
That's right. So the big thing to emerge from the conference for universities was the fact that Ed Miliband's speech didn't mention a Labour policy to lower fees to £6,000 earlier in the year. It had been expected that it would be in Miliband's conference speech that Labour revealed that this would be the policy it takes into the general election, but it's thought that Ed Balls, the Shadow Chancellor, has has sort of blocked the policy for the time being because he wants to more thoroughly go through the costings behind it, because Labour thinks it's going to cost in the region of £2 billion a year. But some people would say there are now sort of question marks over whether Labour will ever be able to announce that policy.
But the big question, John, is do you think that means Liam Byrne got David Willetts's letter?
Well, I did ask him about the letter, actually, and he's definitely read it. He wasn't.
We should say this is the letter published in last week's THE, in which David Willetts said the 6K fee wasn't feasible.
Yeah, I don't think he was very impressed with it. But I shall. I've got an interview where he's going to respond to Willetts's letter. And another thing to come out of the conference was the fact that Yvette Cooper, the Shadow Home Secretary, confirmed that Labour wouldn't have an overall net migration target. So it's going to have a series of targets for different kinds of migration, but there isn't going to be one for international students. So that will please universities a lot, because that's something they've always been pushing for, is to take students out of the net migration target. Because they feel the coalition government's current immigration policy is harming international student recruitment.
Which Chris, I think, will probably comment on a little bit later when we come to his story on India. But moving on, yeah, you can find the Labour Party conference coverage on our website, timeshighereducation.co.uk. There's also a story on page 9 of this week's magazine. And you were tweeting as well. One tweet I enjoyed from the conference was mentioning Ed Miliband's speech and the way it sort of quoted so many ordinary people that he'd met in parks and various different places around the country. You said if he'd met a student who was disappointed at paying 9K fees, maybe that would have made it into a speech.
Yeah, and to steal Chris's joke that he made earlier, maybe 6K fees was part of the speech that he just forgot.
Yeah, true. No, he has admitted to leaving out large sections. Anyway, do search online for those stories. Karen, let's move things along to the books section.
Lots going on this week in history. We have a review of the new book from Francis Fukuyama, Political Order and Political Decay. Those of you who've been following this story, The End of History in 1992, announced by Fukuyama. Of course, that's a vast oversimplification of his nuanced argument, but the take-home message was that with the end of the Cold War, history was over. But of the writing of history books, there is still much to be done. And his latest book, our reviewer Roger Morgan suggests Fukuyama is saying that history may not be over, but the important thing is that the decay in our present democratic institutions may be endemic, and is so it's more a case of decline and fall than end of history. Obviously, decline and fall as a title was already taken. Also this week we have a fantastic book, the Trilobite book, from the University of Chicago Press. Ricardo Levi-Setti is the Trilobite man, and our reviewer Ewan Clarkson, who's an extremely eminent paleontologist from the University of Edinburgh, which continues to be a UK institution, recalls suggesting to the University of Chicago in 1974 that they might do well to publish books by Ricardo Levi-Setti. They paid attention. This is the third one. This week, our book of the week is from Helen Castor. Many of you will know her from the book She-Wolves, The Women Who Ruled England Before Elizabeth. She's back with a book on Joan of Arc and says that her husband and son were very forbearing in having to spend the last 3 years living with not only her, but Joan. This book looks at Joan in political context rather than the slightly pious narratives that a lot of children may have grown up with, especially in France, the idea that Joan was lovely, killed by the perfidious English, and that was all quite nice. That does slightly skate over the French participation in her death. Our reviewer, Rachel Moss at the University of Oxford, praises its ability to summarise 13 complicated years into 3 lively chapters that capture both the bloody brutality and the delicate diplomacy of medieval French politics. Also of interest this week, and great importance, I think, as it ties into our cover story, is Mary Evans' review of Danny Dorling's latest book, Inequality and the 1%, in which Dorling, and this is his second book this year, he's a geographer who likes to get around. His previous book
which was All That Is Solid about the housing crisis, attracted a lot of attention earlier this year. This book looks at those fabled people, the 1%, but Mary Evans suggests that we might do well to think about the 7% as well, the proportion of the secondary school population in private education, as so many of them filter into the 1%. She also highlights what Dorling notes, his estimate of the full cost of a student loan. Presuming a graduate starting salary of £26,000, that £50,000 loan could eventually cost you £166,150, or possibly more. So Dorling also on the cover this week with his cover story, again, about inequality.
Yeah, no, thanks for flagging that up. Some scary stats in that. From our seasoned books editor to our brand new reporter, Chris Havergal, welcome. You started on the THE earlier this week, and I've already been hard at work. What will you be covering for THE?
I'll be covering universities in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. As part of that, I'll be covering the devolution of powers involving higher education from the UK government, which is going to be a very interesting debate in the wake of the Scottish independence referendum. I'll also be covering issues around the internationalisation of higher education, and certainly a lot of interesting issues there, particularly to do with visas and the impact that has on the number of students coming to the UK. Beyond that, I'll be covering a range of topics, including university administration, fundraising and estates. So it's quite a diverse patch.
Indeed, yeah. And plenty already sort of going on your patch, yeah, as it were, this week. You've been writing on page 6 and 7 this week about the Scottish referendum, speaking to some scholars, getting their reactions.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly fair to say there'd probably be more to say if it had been a yes vote. But certainly, I think the issue now is the perhaps uncertainty that exists over what form this more extensive devolution, which is promised by the UK government, will have on higher education, particularly in terms of funding and whether the generous funding for Scottish universities will be able to continue.
And alongside the article on your internationalisation patch, the number of Indian students coming to start courses in the UK has continued to fall. I said at the start of the show we'd mention that, so we better had to. That's your second story.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people in the sector would be aware that those numbers have been going down, but there's a new report from the Higher Education Statistics Agency which makes clear that the number of students starting over the last 2 years fell by 49%. And on top of that, it's got a survey of institutions for the last year, which indicates that that fall, which was witnessed over the preceding 2 years, is continuing. So some concerning issues there about the impact that the government's rhetoric and policies on immigration may be having on the numbers of students coming to the UK from certain countries.
Indeed. Well, thanks for your summary of those stories. And yeah, you'll find them in our news section this week. Before I go, a couple of things to highlight. The Best University Workplace Survey is still running online. There's a link on the homepage. It's also at timeshighereducation.co.uk/Best Uni Workplace. We want to hear all the things you love and indeed loathe about working in UK higher education and at your institution. I should also say that on Wednesday, the 1st of October at 9 p.m. UK time, the World University Rankings 2014-15 will be released. All the results will be live on our site from 9 p.m. on Wednesday. That's all for this week's THE Issue Review. If you want to comment on anything we've discussed, or indeed anything in the magazine, you'll find us on Twitter at Times Higher Ed. You'll find us on Facebook, on LinkedIn, on Google Plus as well, and of course at timeshighereducation.co.uk. But that's all for this week's Issue Review podcast.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.